Welcome to our concluding class of How Writers Write Fiction. This is our goodbye, and we've brought together two wonderful videos by the Indian writer Chandrahas Chowdhury and the American novelist Mona Simpson to give us some ideas about how to create a sustainable writing life. Chandrahas, who is an alumnus of the International Writing Program, is the author of one novel, RZ the Dwarf, and the fiction editor of The Caravan, which is an arts and politics journal.
And Mona Simpson is the author of six novels, including most recently the novel Casebook, and she teaches creative writing at UCLA and Bard College.
When I think about how I became a writer and what I think I've learned that's useful, I think two or three separate things, and some of them are, and they're quite unrelated. They're just things I picked up on the side. I think back, first of all, I think back to how much I've learned by reading unsystematically. And I think there can be no better education. One of the things about being a writer is that you do not follow a certain method, or you can't just follow somebody else's method. You've got to figure out your own. And one, you have to realize that you and I are among some of the luckiest readers in the history of reading. There's never been a generation before the post-2001 that was able to access any book they liked. You know, I've been in America a couple of months, and if you look up on Amazon.com, you can get... you have to compare this to like people in the 16th or 17th century, like who had to wait months, years, and sometimes their entire lives and never got to see a book they wanted to read. And we are so lucky. I think it's the center of responsibility has shifted in literature now from the publisher, who at one point tried to do everything he could to make persuade you that this was the book to read and not something else. The center of responsibility has shifted to the reader, and you and I embody that. It's up to us to make sure that we don't just follow the trends of our time, don't just read off the bestseller list, don't read what's told to us to read, but you know, to dabble around in secondhand bookshops, the haunted bookshop just down the road. Never seen anything like it. It's really wonderful. I was shopping there this afternoon. And there's so many wonderful writers from tiny parts of the world who will teach you how to do things in a way that people from the so-called canon won't. And it's your job, you know, to find a personal history of reading that's right for you and that will show in your work. For instance, when I speak later about an example from literature, I'm going to name a writer who you would, I'm sure you'd never have heard of, and his name is so long that that itself is a kind of impediment to his reception in the West. But to me, this man was one of the greatest technicians in the history of fiction, and part of fiction is... I always say, when we think about how literature is made, half of literature is made from life, from what a writer knows about life. The other half of literature is made from literature, from what the writer knows about other books that he's read before. And it's up to you to find out how to stock your two rooms of your literary house in the best possible way, both by doing some things in the realm of living and by doing some things in the realm of reading that allow you then to make connections between these two and finally be the sort of writer that only you could be, which is the aim of the writing life. As I said, my first point, read unsystematically, read novels from across the world literatures. My second piece of advice is to read, I speak as a prose writer, so my second piece of advice is read in forms that are just outside your own form of choice. So if you're a prose writer, read verse. I find reading, for instance, epic verse or religious verse is a great help to me in like trying to think about momentum in prose. And also read literary criticism. It's very, very important to know how to take a text apart, to know what is original about a text and what is derivative, to know who has done what in what kind of form. And you know, you can't read all the great books of the world, but I've always found it very useful to read like a good weekly book review, the New York Times book review, or the Washington Post book review. I don't know if Bookworld still exists. Or the Guardian book review in England. And, you know, that's a one-step way of keeping up with the world of books, what's new in it. And also, you know, many very good writers write book reviews and write about other books. And I always think a book review is not just a report on a book. It's also an encounter with a very good literary mind. And the two of you are thinking together, the reader and the writer of the book review, are thinking about this text in question, and there's so much stuff that can be learned from that. Not least, you might never get around to reading a book, but if you see somebody thinking about it, there will be an argument that the person is making that allows you to understand what the book is about. And so it's a kind of shortcut to the reading of books. You and I know that one of the very luckiest things about being in literature is that our field is inexhaustible. No matter how hard we work, we are never going to read all the great books in our lives. And a book review, reading a book review supplement, reading book review archives is a shortcut to absorbing some things that we might not get to full on. I think it's very good discipline also to, if you want to be a writer, to keep a notebook. I mean, this one, my handwriting is such that only I can read it, and that's why many of my private experiences in my life remain private, even if I were to lose my notebooks. But it's a way, for instance, if you think about reading a novel, and then it's very likely you'll never read it again in your life, even if you love it a lot. And one way of keeping a bit of that novel with you is to copy out some of the best sentences in it or the best moments in it. And then, if you're sitting in an airport somewhere, a cafe, you're bored, you've got time to pass, you just open your notebook and suddenly you're back in that experience. Part of being a writer, I think, is revision, revising the things that you like best about literature. And this is one way of, again, having all your favorite things about literature close to you. And your notebook is also a way of thinking about plots, writing down ideas. It's always surprising when you write a good story how many incarnations that story has been through. And one of the unfortunate or difficult things about literature is that it's an experience replete with doubt, that even the very best writers sometimes look at the text that they've been trying to write and say, well, I can't do this. I know I can't. It's just too difficult. It will never happen again. And then to be able to go back into the drafts of your previous work, to work that you yourself think of as finished and successful, and to see how much work you had to do to get it up to that stage. I mean, my novel is here, Azi the Dwarf. It took me 4 years to write. For 3 years, it was an absolutely dreadful piece of work. I mean, nobody could bear reading it. I had such great hopes of it. I kept giving out my friends, my closest friends in the world, the people who thanked in the acknowledgements, said to me a year before it was published, I mean, this is really not good. And I had to sit down and I worked on it three more times over the course of that year till just before it went to press, I looked at the proofs and said, well, this is working for me. And so, to keep a notebook, you realize how much work it takes to be a writer, but how much of the time that work is so rewarding in the end, because a book is one of the most durable things that has ever been made by mankind. And your 3 or 4 years of work, all the labor, all the time you've wasted, if it finally leads to something that's permanent, that's really well worth it. And a notebook is a way of keeping a record of that and seeing the stages to which an idea has to go through to get to the finished form. My last piece of advice, and one that leads directly into an exercise that I would really like you to contemplate, I'm going to focus on a moment that I think is at the heart of what fiction does, at the heart of what it means, at the heart of why we try to write stories. And to me, both in the reading of stories and the writing of stories, what we seek is a kind of transcendence. We live in, some of you may be practicing, but for a lot of us live in a post-religious world where God is sometimes thought of as a construct of the human imagination, not so much as a real entity out there. But that doesn't mean that the human need for transcendence, to escape from your own self, doesn't still exist. And to me, fiction is one of the best ways in which this need, again, is answered in a much more egalitarian, common, democratic way. And I'm going to read to you a tiny four-sentence passage from a short story by this Indian writer I was telling you about. His name is Bibhuti Bhushan Bandyopadhyay, an early 20th century writer from Bengal. He wrote in Bengali, and this is an English translation. The passage I'm going to read is about a little boy who, he's about 5 or 6, and his older brother wants to take him to this party at night in the small village. And this boy wants to tag on to everything that his older brother does, but for the first time, he has some doubts about this project. His name is Shantu, and these are his doubts, as told in the story. Shantu wasn't overjoyed at this new plan of his brother's. How could anyone dare to go down to the river's edge after dark? What about the witch living in the tamarind tree on Chinte the Bagdi's land? She pounced on little boys and dragged them to the very tip-top of the tree. No, sunset was a bad time of day. Shantu told his brother his fears. What I think is most beautiful about this passage is we move within it invisibly, without being told, without being warned, from looking at Shantu, who is the object of this passage, we move from looking at him from the outside, where we are the reader and we see this little boy thinking about this party in the evening. Suddenly we are toppled into the world of his mind, and we are given no forewarning by the writer. Shantu wasn't overjoyed at this new plan. How could anyone dare to go down to the river's edge after dark? The storyteller could have said, Shantu thought, how could anyone dare to go down to the river's edge? But by removing those two words, again, one of the lessons of literature, writing is not just about what you put in, but what you take out. By removing that bridge between the storyteller looking at Shantu and Shantu looking at the world, by removing that bridge, B.V.T. Vision like activates the magic of fiction, the magic where from one sentence to another, we are toppled over into a new world and we are given no forewarning. So for a brief moment, we feel like we are Shantu, because we have to like reorient ourselves to say, where is this point of view coming from? We don't believe in witches, but it seems true from here. And this maneuver is repeatedly made in Vibhuti Bhushan's fiction, as it is in some of the greatest writers, in Chekhov, in the Brazilian writer Jorge Amado, whom I recommend you should read. Not very much read these days, but books like Donna Flor and Her Two Husbands, Showdown, The Violent Land, very great books. So my exercise to you would be to try and write a passage about a character where you begin and the reader begins with looking at the character from outside, but something happens in the thought of the passage, the description of the passage, the description of the character, where the language begins to become inflected by the character's own point of view. So at some point, you want to achieve the transition where from looking at the character from the outside, something happens in the detail of what you say that makes it seem as if you're looking at the world from the character's point of view, not looking at the character from the writer's point of view. This is one of the most important sort of, I think this is like the second stage of fiction. Lots of people can write stories about this happened to this person and that person, but what do you do that makes it look like the storyteller is removed from the story and it's like the character and the reader are face to face with one another? This to me is one of the great this is the magic of literature, where a writer can erase himself from the story. And there are many different kinds of methods to that. Virginia Woolf found one in Stream of Consciousness. But this to me is another kind of technique where third-person narration, if you know this technical term, third-person narration and first-person narration are sort of folded into one another. And it's called in the technique of fiction free indirect style, which always seems to me like such a boring technical sounding term for what to me is like would be better called the miracle of fiction. I'll say one last thing before I finish. For a long time, one of my great inspirations in literature has been a man who's a friend of mine. He runs a restaurant in Bombay, where I come from, a big city of 20 million between the sea and the mountains. And one of the things I always was struck by when I listened to him talking is that when he describes his own conversations with other people, interesting people in his life, and always like to latch on to them, he would do both sides of the dialogue. He'd say, I told him, so what are you up to today? Today, I'm not up to anything, but what about a drink? Yeah, we can have a drink. And he wouldn't say, I said, he said, but he'd just like, by slightly changing his emphasis, give you two people inside himself. And to me, you know, this is the storyteller's instinct, and this is part of why we read fiction and write fiction, to hear the different accents of people and to be shunted around in the world of different worldviews. And so the less bridges you make between the different worlds of your characters, the more it seems like life, really. That's what life is like, when we are always being attacked by different viewpoints and are holding out our own against those.
It's very hard to talk in general about craft, because really everybody has to figure out their own way to work. And that's the funny thing. There's really very few formulaic things. I mean, most people will tell you write every day. I find that useful. I write pretty much every day. But then you'll find people who don't do that at all, and that works for them. So the most important thing is actually to find out what works for you. I think one thing you can say for sure is you have to read every day. No one's ever been a great writer without being a great reader. And that's almost the first thing to do. I don't know, I work in a very idiosyncratic way. I start usually with a scrap of an idea. Maybe a character, maybe a voice, maybe something I want to get to. And a first draft for me is usually almost notes to myself. I think characters are critically important. And I think it's important to understand your characters well beyond sort of the pages. I like to know more about my characters than ever really comes up in the book. I think for me, reading and revision are almost interchangeable. I mean, writing and revision are almost interchangeable. I revise things so much that, and sometimes it doesn't seem that I'm revising so much, but more that I'm going back and just seeing what I first intended with that scene. And what I'll have will be almost a kind of trigger to myself to evoke something, which will make me know how to fully render it later on when I go back. I find for me, the question is really what you do or being in the same place every day or any of those things or how long you write. It's really, you've got to figure out how to stay in the work. I mean, you have to be in it. And for me, it's almost like there's a watermark. And sometimes if I work 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever it is, you have to be just slightly over that watermark. And then the whole rest of your day in your life, you'll still be in your book. You'll be thinking of your people. You'll be getting ideas for it. It'll all sort of be, your unconscious will be working all the time on that book. And yet, if you'd gone just below that watermark, you would stop at the 2 hour point and you wouldn't be alive to the work the rest of the day. So your goal is to kind of get in it far enough and deep enough that you stay in it. I don't usually worry about being too influenced because I usually read a number of different things. So I would be, you know, torn in so many different directions that probably all evens out. But I think one thing that we don't always do when we're young is, I think it's important to, I mean, we all read for pleasure. That's what brought us to this in the first place and what keeps us in it. But I think it's important to read not only for pleasure. I think it's important to read, you know, once or twice for pleasure. But then to read a piece of work that you love in a sort of analytic way, not necessarily letting yourself get carried away again by the sort of sweep of the thing or the suspense, but actually looking at exactly how the writer makes their time transitions or how many characters they're introducing when, or looking at the structural elements and looking at the proportion of narration to dialogue and the proportion of summary to scenes. I think all of those elements are very important to study in a way. I mean, we're trying to build these complicated things, and not that you want to copy. You couldn't really, even if you tried. So I think that kind of rereading is very, very important. And I like to read very very widely. I've started reading, sometimes now I'm even reading more than one book at once, and I often read in relation to what I'm writing. I'll have a sort of, almost like a, you might crave, you know, something with iron in it if you're deficient in your diet. I'll crave something specific that I need for my work. And, you know, if I told you what scene I wrote in while I was reading something, you would never notice the correlation, but sometimes you just need some element in that thing you're studying. I think the most useful thing for revision, in a way, is to have a certain amount of time. Usually, if you let it sit for a while, when you read it again, you'll know things you want to do. It'll just arise. And it's that degree of certainty that I feel like you should have to revise. I mean, I think, you know, we're all familiar in America with the workshop system. And it's great, and we love it, but I think you can go too far with workshopping. I don't think it's not a democracy. I don't think you have to, you know, people are asked to give opinions and they feel called upon to help. So they have ideas, but often they're writing their own story on top of a good situation, and that may not be the direction you want to go. So I think unless it's good to get comments, but you want to see if people are reading it the way you intended it. But other than that, you almost, from your own reading or from what somebody says, you should have a sense of, you know, there should be a definite sense that that's what you're going to do. You know, I think there's nothing more valuable than your peers, you know, than the people you went to school with the people you've sort of started out with. And sometimes, I mean, it's, you have to see it really as a professional thing. It's easy for anything that's not highly paid for people to see it as a kind of semi-social situation. And you do become friends with people whose work you read and but you have to see it fundamentally as a work relationship. And sometimes you'll grow out of each other in a certain way. I mean, I don't know. I've known friends who were more useful to each other at one point in their life than they are now. One of them may be writing in a wildly divergent way from where they started, or maybe both are, and they're not. They don't love reading each other's work anymore, or they're just not thrilled with the direction they're going. But it's very valuable if you can to find long range intellectual and artistic peers, you know, to find people whose work you genuinely like to read and whose work you've read all of, so you can speak comparatively, so you can say, well, I like this, but what you did over here might work in this second part, or you know, so you have a complete frame of reference. That's a really valuable thing, worth investing in. I don't know that you have to necessarily have exactly the same aesthetic, and you're never going to find anyone who has exactly the same aesthetic, but I think that you have to feel at the end of the day that what they want most their work to be, that if it became that, you would love it and respect it. If you feel like, well, you know, he likes this thing over here, but I really like the sort of thing that he doesn't value so much, but that he can do that's over here. If he really wants to do this, you're not going to be a great critic for him. I mean, I think you want to believe that they're making the right aesthetic choices, because you have to be honest. There's no use in falsity with this. I think you almost have to think of yourself. I mean, in other fields, you know, scientists talk to each other, doctors talk to each other, critics talk to each other. It's an important thing. You're sharing. You know, there's a new piece of work out, and recently we've all become excited about Elena Ferrante. You know, it's great to have other people to discuss that, to talk about it, but to see how that pertains to your work and their work.
Mona Simpson speaks in the video you have just watched for this week of creating the sustainable writing life. We hope that some of what you've enjoyed these past few weeks through our exercises, our discussion forum, the conversations, the workshops, has begun that process for you, begun the process of expanding and refining your work, finding what your own process is going to be, find the rules that work for you and the rules that don't work for you. And I think it's also important to remember what both Mona Simpson and Chandrahas Chaudhry emphasized this week, and several other writers have emphasized, that to be a writer is to be a reader. You have to develop a writing routine, but a reading routine that supplements that. The poet Gerald Stern said not long ago in an interview, "We are readers, all of us, who sometimes write a poem." And that is also true for fiction writers. Shandana Minhas, in our very first session, recommended reading beyond your culture, reading beyond your own experience, so you'll have something to compare it with. We have Chandrahas Chaudhry reminding us that he had to develop his own personal reading routine and the pleasure of reading unsystematically. That's what the pleasure of being a fiction writer is, that these two things go together. Find others who are peers to look at your work to help you revise it, and this forum has been an opportunity to do that. And remember that when it comes to the revision process, writing is about what you put in, but it's also about what you take out.
And writing is an adventure. It's an experiment, like this class itself. As we've said before, this is the first creative writing MOOC in fiction, and we hope that you'll take that course survey to give us some honest feedback about what worked for you and what didn't, so that in the next iteration of this class, we'll be able to incorporate those changes, revise them, if you will, and come up with something even livelier. As I say to myself every day in my writing life, it's a journey that we're embarking upon, and we have no idea where it's going to take us. But to be in conversation with the great writers through the ages, across borders, from different walks of life, to be involved in a conversation with our deepest thoughts, our fears, the things that bewilder us. There is no greater pleasure than that. And so as we say goodbye to you and thank you for your amazing work in the forums, the many posts and exercises that you've given us, the different ways that you've prompted us to think about writing, enjoy. Keep writing and rewriting.
Thank you all.